Now we welcome Dr. Tony Lindsay, clinical and health psychologist and author of The Certainty Myth, a guide for anyone struggling with uncertainty in their life, whether it's caused by the pandemic, a relationship breakdown, job loss, illness or something else. Uncertainty can often lead to anxiety. But Dr. Tony Lindsay has practical tools to help manage the anxiety that can come when our lives feel chaotic and uncertain. She currently works at the Chris O'Brien Lifehouse Cancer Treatment Centre in Sydney, working with both adults and adolescents, and we've spoken to Tony previously in that context, but wonderful to have you back with the new book, Tony. Welcome.
Awesome. Thanks for having me.
It's really interesting. This question of anxiety, it can be specific to life events or to what someone is personally going through, but it's also kind of generic when we have pandemics, wars, economic crises land at once. And the uncertainty is part of the human condition. We just don't get to know everything. Can you speak to that first?
Yeah, absolutely. And I guess probably the way that we've come to manage uncertainty has probably come largely from our evolutionary background. You know, if I think about us when we were being chased by tigers and various other things, it was good to have certainty, you know, is the tiger going to eat us or not? Whereas our world doesn't really look like that anymore. And as humans, we have very little tolerance for this kind of space in between the black and white, or, you know, in this gray space, which is where the uncertainty turns up. And as a result, we often work really hard to try and get rid of that uncertainty. And that can mean things like trying to be in control of everything all of the time, trying to kind of micromanage situations. The complexity in that, though, is, you know, in the last couple of years have been a great example of this. Stuff just happens that's outside of our control. And we actually, even when we're trying to manage stuff, that doesn't usually work for us. And so what then happens is when people are really trying to manage these things and not allowing any space for uncertainty, often things like anxiety, depression and other things will crop up.
It's also the case, just speaking to this kind of generic mood at the moment, can we try it? We overthink things because we want to try and work out what's going to happen. Whereas to your point, you need to accept that actually you don't have control over these things. You can have some plans and strategies depending on what happens. But we can get into trouble when we try and overthink, and young people can too, I think, overthink how something is going to play out.
Absolutely. And I think our brains do a fantastic job of thinking of the 45 million scenarios that may happen that we need to think through every detail of and prepare ourselves for. But the reality is, and the pandemic's a good example, the people I see in my clinic room with various diagnoses of things are a good example as well, in that the things that we plan for, the things that we worry about or think about or go into that detail, are not likely the things that are actually going to happen to us. We've got very low predictability around actually being able to make sense of those big things that happen. But also the flip side of that is when those things happen, and possibly you've got examples of this in your own life, we actually just kind of get on and manage stuff when hard things turn up. You know, often if I think about when people have experienced really significant hardship, they would think, if I'd asked them 6 months before, they would say, no, there's no way I would manage that. But actually when they're in it and doing it, they're kind of just in it and doing it. And so those thoughts, we feel better for having them, but they're actually not very helpful.
We often say, don't we, when we come out of a very bad spot, I didn't realise how bad I felt until I felt better again. But as you say, we're just busy getting on and doing. Well, let's get to some of the strategies. And I don't know if you want to speak to the general kind of uncertainty and angst that recent events and global events are causing all of us, or whether you want to get a bit more specific into advice you would give to someone who perhaps has had an illness, as you say, they're going through a divorce, the business has, you know, been trashed by the pandemic, and they've really got themselves into a particular place for them. Could we just start to talk about some of the strategies?
Absolutely. And it's almost hard to talk about one without the other, in the sense that I think we need to recognize, as kind of humans on the earth at the moment, things are hard. And they're hard for lots of reasons. And you could argue that they're always probably hard. But at the moment, there is very much a sense that people are kind of running on lower reserves than normal because we are all a bit exhausted from everything that's been happening. But those, you know, I think there was kind of a sense of hope that at the end of the pandemic, things would go back to normal. And what we're kind of starting to see is actually there's all of these flow-on effects. And so I guess kind of thinking about, well, what are the specific things that people can do? The things that I guess I find most helpful in talking with lots of people in this space is about thinking about really simple things. It's often about things like slowing down, coming back to the here and now. Lots of this uncertainty stuff, or pretty much all of it, lives in the future and in our minds. And so doing really simple things of just kind of coming back to the here and now and going, okay, right here in this moment, even if that moment's hard, I'm okay. I can manage this moment. Similarly, doing things with checking in around how much do I actually know right now for certain versus the what's my brain telling me what might happen in the future. And what tends to happen when people do that is it allows your brain a bit of space and distance from all of those thoughts that are kind of going on in our minds to get a bit of clarity to be able to say, actually, what I do know is this. Okay, what can I do about that thing? Lots of the work that kind of can be helpful in this space is largely about recognizing and naming things. There's something really powerful about actually naming this kind of voice in your mind as anxiety and being able to say, okay, anxiety, I see you. You've showed up. Okay, I get to make a choice about what I do with you. So rather than being pushed around by the anxiety, you have a sense of, okay, I see you. I know that you're there. How am I going to show up to you today? And we know that underpinning everything, and, you know, the last couple of years have been a great example of this. And definitely when I meet people in times of crisis, it becomes really clear to us very quickly what's important to us. And if we can use that as a compass and turn up and do the things that are important, even though we accept that things are hard, the uncertainty is there, we might have other stuff going on in our lives, if we can kind of show up and do the important stuff, it doesn't get rid of this uncertainty, and that's absolutely not the goal. If I can meet anyone who can tell me how to get rid of this stuff, I'm very happy to have a chat. But very much it's about being able to say, okay, I see you, but I'm going to show up and do what's important for me anyway. And that's absolutely what happens when we talk to people kind of in a crisis or when really big stuff's happening. That stuff becomes really clear.
I know I've often caught myself saying and again identifying a certain feeling and then just saying there are reasons you're feeling like this and then running through them. Like there might be any number of things going on and you think, actually when you add all this up, it makes perfect sense that I'm feeling a bit this way. And again, once you've recognised it and identified it and named it, then you understand why you're feeling the way you're feeling, right?
Absolutely. And I think there's a huge importance in that, in kind of, and this will possibly sound a bit strange, but kind of showing up with kindness to that person as well. I think we're very quick to tell ourselves, oh, you shouldn't be worried about this, or you shouldn't be struggling, or this thing isn't reasonable. Actually, all of us are kind of doing the best we can, right?
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
This stuff is really reasonable. In the last couple of years, having been through what most people in the world have been through, people were saying, you know what, I'm not worried about this at all. I'd kind of be going, oh, that's a bit strange. Like, it's really normal that anxiety and worry and difficult things turn up. That's part of being a human. And so being kind to ourselves around that is actually a really important piece.
The other thing that's happened, and this speaks to your next point, is recognising the things that are important. And again, speaking personally, but I think this has happened to a lot of people, really narrowing the bandwidth, right? Really narrowing the bandwidth back to the simple, basic things that are most important to you. And that can be healthy, or certainly healthy as a focus.
Yeah, absolutely. And I always reflect on, obviously, in my kind of clinical world, I often bump into people who are facing kind of the end of their lives or dealing with really, really complex things. And not once in that time has anyone ever said to me, gee, I wish I worked more, or I'm really sad that I, you know, didn't put in that extra 70-hour week. You know, people tend to focus on small, simple things. You know, we often expect that these, the things that make life meaningful will be these huge, giant things. It's usually the opposite. It's the sitting in the sunshine and reading a book, or noticing the local birds kind of having their babies and stuff, which is happening in Australia at the moment. And, you know, all of those simple things. And like you said, kind of paring back stuff and going, you know what, what's actually important to me? What's the stuff that day after day gives me pleasure, gives me meaning, gives me purpose, and feels kind of grounding and helpful for me?
Routine is a good thing.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. We are not built to be routineless. I think we've all got fantasies about being those, you know, carefree people who don't need structure. We all need structure. It's part of what kind of keeps us ticking. And when I say structure, I don't necessarily mean that every moment of your day is accounted for, but kind of simple things like getting up and going to bed at the same time, having kind of regular meals, having, you know, some social things through the week so you've got some kind of continuity in that space, thinking about how do I spend these blocks of time? Because what we know that is if people don't have routine and they're kind of left to their own devices, sometimes that kind of worry and anxiety is more likely to kick off, because when kind of without kind of structure or purpose or meaning, what tends to happen is our brain kind of kicks into overdrive and we just start thinking about every possibility that might happen.
Another little bit of self-talk is that it won't always feel the way it does right now. And I think this is where adults have an unfair disadvantage over so many young people at the moment, because most of us will have been through any number of scary times, awful times, sad times, and we know we feel better again, right? And it's hard message to give to someone else. And of course, you do so in conjunction with recognising their feelings. But it is something you can keep reminding yourself.
Absolutely. And I think you're absolutely right on that. It's advice that we can take on ourselves in a way that's much easier for us to give to other people. Well, we can give it to other people, whether they receive it or not, you know. But I think absolutely, it's really, really tough when you're in something sometimes to see that there's a way out of it. But we know, and life tells us, that everything's just for now. You know, this moment, this feeling, as is, you know, even the most intense of things, they don't stay intense forever. But until you've been through that iteration a few times, it's hard for us to know that. And so I would encourage people, you know, if you're seeing particularly young people in your lives that are struggling with this stuff, actually kind of, A, giving them space, as you said, to kind of name what's going on for them, because that in itself is really powerful. But also being in that space of going, you know what, you're turning up to this really well. What's going to help you keep getting through it? And hopefully on the other side of that, they can look back on this space and go, actually, I did as well as I could to get through this.
There's two points I think that go hand in hand that are really important. One is to do the things that are important, to work out what choices or actions you should take. And then the second is not to think there's going to be a perfect time for it. This is a time, again, where a lot of people are making transitions, or they're thinking about making transitions. This could be relationships, it could be jobs, it could be where you live, it could be any number of things. It could be what's happening with a parent or someone you're caring for. So let's do the two things together. First, working out the things that are important, and then second, not waiting for what seems to be the perfect time.
Yeah, absolutely. And they do go very much hand in hand. You know, I often find myself having conversations with people saying, are we waiting for all of the lights to be green here? You know, there will never be a perfect time in life. And most of the time, actually, the things that we look back on and say, oh, I did really well in that. Had we have waited for the perfect time, we might have missed opportunities. We might have not got things done. And I see a lot, people are waiting for this space for everything to feel okay. And so there's a huge power in going, you know what, my brain's going to tell me every day there's a reason for me not to do this thing that's important. You know, I use going to the gym as a really good example, right? Every person that sets their alarm for 5:30, that voice that wakes up with that alarm goes, no, dude, too cold, don't go out, you don't want to do this, you'll go later, it's fine. But actually, you know.
Is that a universal script?
Pretty much. I feel like most people have a version of that guy that turns
I've also
brain.
Got it's really nice and warm in bed, is it?
yeah, totally. That's also the other piece. But then there's something really powerful about saying to that guy, thanks, man, but I'm going to do it anyway. And my guess is that 99.9% of the time you get up, you go to the gym, and you feel better for doing it. But if we kind of are waiting for that perfect time of it's the exact right temperature, it's the exact right situation, I've got all of my gym clothes exactly ready, you know, I know that there's going to be no one else in the gym, I won't feel self-conscious, we would never do anything. And so it's really important to kind of pair those two pieces together. And if you work out what's important to you, it's really easy to work out some little steps of what you do every day to make that thing happen.
That could apply to some large life decisions as well, I imagine, as well. Just some specifics that you touch on in the book. Things like there's one, we've just talked about making decisions. And when you're feeling burnt out, because goodness, that's a double whammy, isn't it? Like everyone is worried, they've got this uncertainty, they've got problems, and at the same time, they've just got nothing left on the candle wick, it feels like, to deal with it all. So what's your advice?
So the burnout stuff is really tricky, because burnout, and I use this analogy a lot, I think, but burnout's a little bit like a wave. And depending on where on the wave you are, depends a little bit about what action you need to take. So I think by the time people recognize they're burnt out, they've usually been burnt out for a little while. And so there's often some really helpful things about just kind of in those moments, slowing down, recognizing what's what's happening in this moment, and then trying to work out ways of taking a pause. And when I say taking a pause, I'm not talking about quitting your job and moving to Barbados, but I'm talking about, you know, maybe saying, you know what, I need to take a couple of days out. Or if you're feeling really exhausted from caring duties or, you know, all of the complexity that has come up in the last little while, it might even be taking a break from things like social media or just taking some time out to let your brain kind of slow down a little bit. I would say, you know, which may sound a bit counterintuitive to what we were just talking about, but sometimes it's not the right time to make really big life decisions. And coming from a place of being really burnt out and exhausted, we know that we're probably not going to make decisions that might be the right decision. And so my kind of general rule of thumb is, if it's a good decision now, it'll still be a good decision in, you know, 2 months' time or 3 months' time or whatever time frame you kind of allow.
That's really wise. And you don't want knee-jerk stuff. And a lot of the stuff that you put in the book about decision making is, do you have all the information you need? All sorts of checks and balances to have on making the decision. And certainly, are you in the frame of mind and the headspace to make the decision is a relevant one.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, thinking about where we all are, and I don't think I'm making a huge leap by saying that most people are pretty exhausted. And we often don't know why we're exhausted, because, you know, it's not like we've been running marathons for the last 2 years. Like, lots of us have actually been working from home, or, you know, but actually that process is exhausting. The task loading is exhausting. So the mental kind of work that we've been doing, you know, people are pretty depleted. And so I wonder whether, rather than trying to come up with a solution in terms of I need to change something, the solution might actually be, I just need to slow things down for a while.
Exactly.
I need to get some perspective. You know, let's see what this looks like in a little while, when I've kind of been able to refuel the tank a little bit.
You know, it's so insightful. In many ways, some people's lives have trucked on pretty much as is the last 2 or 3 years. But we are, as well as being suckers for uncertainty, we are also social animals, and we cannot help but feel what is happening around us and what has happened to people. And, you know, that it's that kind of processing fatigue, to your point, I think that is universal, as well as others who've suffered very directly one way or another. The gist of your argument is accepting uncertainty is a thing, right?
Yep.
And we're not going to be perfect at that either. But limiting,
no.
or at least being aware of the intolerance of uncertainty, because we're all going to have to live with it.
Absolutely. And, you know, thinking about how do we recognise that uncertainty? You know, when those cogs kind of start to take off in our brains and going, okay, I'm trying to plan for a million things, or I'm, you know, waking in the middle of the night thinking about scenarios, even just saying to yourself, oh, that's the uncertainty showing up. Just by the nature of that, you already buy yourself some space, which means that you can kind of slow things down a little bit and get a bit more kind of perspective on where you are. I think that kind of process of just being really present to right here, right now, I'm okay, is really important.
Wonderful. Thanks. That is Toni Lindsay. The book is The Certainty Myth. It is published by Exile Publishing.